Hi, welcome to another segment on Focal Point. This is Stephen Thal, and I will be your host for today's program. We have some very interesting guests with us today, and they're from the New England ADA Center in Boston, Massachusetts. And we're going to learn more about the Resource Center and how it may help many of our listeners. Tatiana Saab, the director of the program, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And then we also have Jason Angel.
Good afternoon.
So welcome both of you, and let's get right to it. So what is the New England ADA Center?
So the ADA National Network provides information, guidance, and training on how to implement the Americans with Disability Act in order to support the mission of the ADA to ensure equality of opportunity, full participation, independent living, and economic self-sufficiency for individuals with disabilities. Funded by the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research, the network consists of 10 regional ADA centers located throughout the United States and an ADA Knowledge Translation Center. Each regional ADA center focuses on its region's unique needs. This regional focus is critical to ensuring that the ADA National Network services meet the needs of a diversity of populations and stakeholders throughout the country.
Can you give us an example of how what one region would do that's important to their residents as opposed to some of the other regions in the country?
Well, I think the main thing that we do is that we know our region. So we know the resources. If the question that the person has might not be related to the ADA Act, we can direct them to local resources that can assist them. It might be something as simple as a food bank. It could be something complicated related to fair housing. But we know where to direct them and how to assist them in resolving and accessing the crucial resources that assist people in being dependent in the different regions. So, you know, sometimes we get calls from other regions, but because I'm not in Colorado, for instance, I would direct them to the Colorado Regional Center. That way they would know what's the best resources that they could tap into, and they also know the local codes. So different states have different accessibility codes, and so that's also another important factor for us to consider.
Jason, please share with the audience your position at the New England ADA Center.
So I am a technical assistant. I provide information and guidance to individuals or organizations so they help either understand their rights or their obligations under the law. And that can include things like understanding reasonable accommodations, reasonable modifications, enforcement of the ADA, or even something more technical, like as Tatiana has mentioned, local building codes or building codes related to the ADA, which is the 2010 ADA Standards for Accessible Design.
Also, you probably will be discussing digital media or architectural barriers as well, correct?
That is correct. So, interestingly, we get calls often where we have a large stock of built facilities. And so very often an architect will be looking how to retrofit larger size requirements of accessible elements into existing facilities. And so what I can do is spend time with them in understanding what does the ADA require, what are your space limitations, and then ensuring that the standards are met to the maximum extent feasible. If there's instances where there might be something where there is a challenge to completely putting an element into the appropriate space. And then the digital access side of things, as you mentioned, that I'll get to in just a bit, is something that's prominent with people with low vision or people who are blind, with looking for a fair access into digital portals. So digital access is becoming more prominent in the eyes of state and local governments and the federal government.
So this you're referring to is websites, correct? Or like
website and other digital access. So not just websites, but apps, you know, phone applications that people can access services.
What about accessing their healthcare plan benefits or healthcare?
Very good point.
That's a very good point.
Is that healthcare portals,
right,
which were very prominently used during the recent pandemic? That's where a lot of the lack of proper digital accessibility was highlighted. So people who are blind or have low vision trying to book, go through certain portals to book vaccinations were left out in the cold because the system in one form or another wasn't able to work with, say, a screen reader or a JAWS application.
And that's has improved since that time, since the COVID?
Yeah. Last July, the president announced that they were going to impose new rulemaking for the accessibility of web content and mobile apps. And so the Department of Justice this past year has created rulemaking about this. And so they've seen that the requirement for digital access is important for especially state and local governments at this time. So this may be a precursor also to digital access for private entities as well. So with this rulemaking, they're stating that state and local governments, which provide some level of electronic access in paying for taxes, accessing their websites, applies to different areas of government. And so they're wanting to ensure that a person who is not blind or low vision or doesn't have a disability has the same access, that the entity provides the same access for people with disabilities. So that can be from anything from like your police departments, your state and local courts, election offices, libraries, transit agencies, and things like you've said, also public health entities.
Yeah, and I think that would also include elections, voting.
Very importantly, coming up, absolutely.
Because there is accessibility for those that are blind or visually impaired and for some other folks with physical challenges as well. And I would imagine, too, people who are deaf, too.
Right. There was a Fair Elections Voting Act that was passed not that long ago, and that goes a long way into providing access. I think what this new rulemaking for web and mobile accessibility does is supplements these other laws like that by making sure that a person with or without a disability going to vote has the same freedom to cast their ballot.
Have you had many cases or challenges involving people using service animals lately?
Service animals seems to be one of the more popular topics that come up, either in trainings or discussions within our technical assistance groups. So it always seems like there's one twist or another to a situation. There's been incidences where a person has shown up to, say, a food service entity, and they were denied access because whoever served as the gatekeeper, whether it was the manager or waitstaff, said that the person and their dog wasn't allowed to go through a food service line. And so it's incidences like that where the person with the service animal has to try their best to inform somebody that's already entrenched in their belief that that dog doesn't belong there to convince them that they have the same rights as others in accessing places like that. That's just kind of one take on it. There's been other instances where people are passing off their pets as emotional support animals.
Right.
There's other instances where people are purchasing certification on websites to then say, well, now I have bought this certification off this website, I have a service animal. When in fact that those service animal registries do not require any training of the service animal. So it creates these unfortunate situations where people either vastly uninformed of what a true service animal needs to be, which is for a person with a disability, and have to perform a trained worker task. So if they aren't aware of that, then they think they've got this card that proves that it does. But it creates tensious situations in different places.
Oh, there's no question about it. I know personally, I use a seeing eye dog, and I've had to show my ID card from the school that the dog was properly.
See, that's one of the things that kind of causes problems. People have been in situations enough where they feel like people are just really bringing in their pets. So then those same folks that are serving as gatekeepers think that they can ask for certification. Certification is not required, unfortunately. Unfortunately, that's one of the areas of confusion. So when you have a person that's purchased these cards, then, you know, people get familiar with that and think that's what's required. When a person with a disability can train their own service animal and thus does not have any sort of certification of that training. So I think in some instances that it can provide a moment of clarity, but it's unfortunate because it's the person that serving as that gatekeeper that doesn't understand what their obligations are, doesn't understand the rights of people with disabilities and their service animals.
Yeah, because we've been told.
But if I can compliment.
Go ahead.
I can compliment this. And I think that's the value of the New England ADA Center and the other national centers around the country, is that if a restaurant, for instance, or a business owner call us for clarification on the service animal, we can explain to them their obligations under the ADA and give them good information that they can rely on so they are compliant with the Americans with Disability Act. And that way, the public and also the businesses are educated on how to handle this and how to address the issues that come up when people are utilizing the name service animals in the wrong way, right? So I think the New England ADA Center can provide that clarification, and that's very helpful.
Well, it's my understanding that the ADA has a definition of a service animal, and it's usually a dog that performs specific functions for the person with a disability. And, of course, there's also that added one where the miniature ponies can be involved in as well for people with visual impairment.
Yes, you're right, Steve. If any animal that has been trained to perform some specific tasks for the person with disability, so it can be different animals. There is no, the ADA does not reduce that it's one particular kind of animal. It can be other animals that can be trained to perform a task. And as long as they are trained, now that means that the service animal is under the control of its handler at all times. So they're trained, and they also are trained to stay by the side of their handler, and they provide a service. They are working animals.
So if I could add to that, Stephen, what Tatiana's getting at is that the ADA doesn't restrict any breed of dogs, but the Department of Justice does limit it to just dogs.
Right.
And as a reasonable modification to their policy, they do allow for miniature horses. But even still then, they do need to be trained to perform a work or a task.
Right, right.
They also need to meet the conditions of a service animal.
Correct.
Meaning that they need to be on leash unless that leash interferes with a job or task that they perform.
Mm-hmm.
No barking or growling, and strictly housebroken.
We're listening to Tatiana Saab and Jason Angel, who specializes in specific functions services that are interfering with the ADA. I know there was a recent newsletter that came out. Can you review a few things that were mentioned in the newsletter?
Sure. I'd also like to make sure that Tatiana has some time to describe some of the research that's being performed by the New England ADA Center as well.
Okay, Tatiana.
Interestingly.
Yeah, why don't we have Tatiana speak about that now?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve. Yes, we are very excited because along the 34 years that this ADA has been in existence, it's going to be 34 years anniversary this July, the number of Black, Indigenous, and people of color using the ADA resource centers as a resource, as a place to call and get information, is very limited. They have not been accessing our services as much as we would like anybody to access our services. So we are doing a research and trying to find out how BIPOC people, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, how they relate to their disability, if they see themselves as a person with a disability, and also where do they go for information that they trust, and what kind of methods are the best way for them to learn about the ADA and the civil rights protections that the ADA affords people. So also, given the simple definition of what is a disability, right? Because not many people understand that a disability is anything that impacts your ability to perform everyday tasks in your daily life. So a person with high blood pressure, for instance, that can't perform, that is impacting their daily life, is a person with a disability. A person that has mental health challenges is a person with disability. Disability is not something that's just visible, but there's many disabilities that are invisible that people cannot just tell that you have a disability just from looking at you. So our research is trying to do is understand the need of this population that has been largely left out of the ADA protections, and then find mechanisms of connecting with them in a way that's culturally sensitive and culturally appropriate, so they can be taking part of the civil rights protections that the ADA affords them.
Yeah, because it's my understanding that one of the casinos in Connecticut, I think it's the Mashantucket Casino, has been looking for some help in redoing their museum to make it more accessible to people to understanding the indigenous histories there.
Absolutely, and we are actually very excited in Connecticut to be connected to one of the tribes, Native Indigenous people, to be part of this research that we are doing. And the research is called Participatory Action Research, where the people that are being surveyed and researched, they are part of coming up with the solutions, how we're going to solve this problem. So it's just not a one-way. Research is really a two-way conversation, and people are empowered to get the results of the survey to apply in the betterment of their communities and their own lives.
I was reading in your newsletter, you know, with my magnifier, about that they made skin diving accessible to people with low vision needs. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. We try to find stories in our newsletter that appeal to a broad range of people in connecting not only in a way to so that people understand their rights, but also human interest, which, you know, a story like that where it features a person with a disability at a young age and how they adapted the guiding experience so that this person who was blind could participate in an activity that they really cared about. But our newsletter has quite a few different stories like that. So another feature this month was in celebration of Earth Day, and I don't mean to plug another company, but Starbucks has made an effort to reduce waste. And at the same time, they made it an opportunity to create cups that were more accessible to those who are visually impaired. So they're featuring some Braille on the cups that will indicate different sizes and also the lines to indicate where measurements for better contrast on the cups themselves. Also in the same newsletter, there was an individual that created their own accessible technology so that they could better use video game systems. So interestingly, the major companies that make video game systems have limited capabilities to allow adaptation for accessible technologies. Mm-hmm. And this one individual came up with his own controller that allows for a digital overlay where people can use just one finger or through eye or facial recognition to control their avatars or whatever it is on the screen. So that opens up the opportunity for gaming for a lot of people. That's important. I mean, part of the ADA when it was revised in 2008 was to include not just a person's ability to pay their taxes or, you know, be part of the municipal government, but it focused also on recreation. And so individuals sometimes have to take up that mantle, or entities or businesses, into providing greater access.
Now, how about accessible to the controls on washing machines and dryers? Is that still in the works, or are some companies doing that now?
Well, it comes down to demand lots of times. You know, it takes, I think, some initiative by people or groups with disabilities to say, hey, this is a flaw in your design. I shouldn't have to try to reach over the entire appliance to reach the controls for this product, whether it's a washing machine or a stove, where it could be that much more dangerous. And so companies have started listening. I mean, they've created displays that are easier, more functional, you know, so easily understandable, and then placing the controls at the front of an appliance will be that much easier. Even for myself, I'm a person with a disability, and so on our wash machine, the controls are at the face instead of trying to reach across the entire appliance. Interestingly, though, appliances aren't mandated by the ADA. It's places of public accommodation. One way to kind of understand this simply is if you were to take a facility or building, turn it on its side, and shake everything out of it, the ADA would apply to what's left. Now, that's kind of a broad view of that, but it's one that helps people understand in its simplicity what the ADA does apply to. People have to be careful when some product claims that it's ADA accessible, because unless they've used the standards for accessible design in developing that product, there isn't a stamp to say, you know, this product is ADA compliant.
People that have phones, iPhones, cell phones, whatever, and they don't give you the book anymore, can you request a booklet of that product?
That I'm unsure of, unfortunately, Stephen. That would likely be a reasonable modification request that they would need to consider. So if an entity is providing a product, then they might, in access to that product, they might need to make sure they're considering different methods on ways that people access that information. So very similar to the website, you know, a website, you know, how does a person access that information, and are there alternatives? So, for example, state and local governments, where they provide a form, you know, for registering your dog, you know, they can have a fillable PDF online. They can have one that people can download. But they also should be prepared that if a person with a disability calls, that there's somebody that may need to provide assistance in filling out that form as a modification.
Can you give your phone number?
Steve, if I can complement one small thing here, is that with the phones and computers and technology, there's often the apps are being developed all the time that can help with the screen reader, be it a screen reader application, be it a voiceover. There's many different apps that are available these days to help you interact with the technology at your hand. So there's many workarounds technology that's offered.
Okay. All right. Because I notice some people learn by reading the book, you know, with assistance instead of trying to get it off the computer, because they're not as computer literate as other people. You have different levels of computer literacy. I'm finding that's true with older people so that they can learn how to use the different products. I notice with cars, they don't give you a car manual anymore. If you have a problem, you got to go on your phone or the computer to try to find out what the problem is and then fix it.
I think when we get into this parts of these types of discussion, we've kind of crossed the line of where the ADA applies. So it's good that a entity that is giving a product out makes sure there's different points of access to their information. However, we're not looking at, you know, as looking at it as a place of public accommodation, though. So yeah. There is a line in which we move from what, you know, where the ADA applies, and then into areas like kind of our recent discussion here in the last minute or two on accessing that information. It certainly does affect people with disabilities, and that's why I would reiterate that it's important that somebody making a product has different access points to information in different ways so that people can understand their product or their systems or whatever it is that they're trying to become familiar with.
Yeah, okay. Well, can you folks give us a phone number in case somebody wants to call you for information?
Absolutely. So our number, and it's a national number, it's also connected to your area code. So you will be directed to the New England region if you have a New England area code, and it is 1-800-949-4232.
All right, repeat it
and
again.
And that, again, is 1-800-949-4232. I'd also like to just follow up to let people know that we're not an enforcement agency. We're here to help people understand their rights under the law. So I know some folks will want to call and file a complaint, but we're not a complaint agency. We'll help you understand what your rights are and lead you to the next best direction on where to file your complaint. All of our calls are confidential as well. So it's important to know that people should feel comfortable when they call us, knowing that we're not reporting to, you know, a federal agency or something like that about their specific concern.
This has been a very interesting program, and I would like to thank you both, Cassiana and Jason, for bringing us up to date on the New England ADA Center. So thank you both again, and I wish everybody on your staff success.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen. We really appreciate being here, and we applaud this public service because it is, in the end, the ADA Center is our public service agency where we are trying to connect with people and connect them to their civil rights. So this is a really important topic, and we are very grateful to be able to speak about our work and what we can do for the public.
This is Stephen Thal with another segment on Focal Point. And we want to thank everyone for tuning in. Should anybody in our audience have any questions, please contact the New England ADA Center at 1-800-949-4232. Again, 1-800-949-4232. And they can give you some information and where to go to carry it forward. So again, thank you. Two things I want to leave with everybody. One is, wear your sunglasses when you're outside to protect your eyes, and wear a hat as well. The sun is very bright this year, so protect them. And secondly, create an emergency plan at home, and then practice it with the people you live with. And when you're traveling, make sure you're aware of two exits, so in case one is blocked, you can get out safely. This is for your health. So I wish everybody stay healthy and stay safe, and thank you all for listening.